All right, welcome in the latest edition of the That's So Cincinnati podcast. I'm your Bengals columnist, Paul Denver Jr., here with Politics Extra. Jason Williams, did you miss me?
I did, man. Welcome back.
Oh, it's good to be back. Sherry had a great time. It's a lot of work. People, you know, so I was at the Super Bowl last week, which is why Sherry pinch hit and did a great job. I loved the episode. Appreciate the shout outs at the end.
Absolutely.
But yeah, it's for people. I was like, oh, you got to the Super Bowl. You make it sound like they do, like when they interview the players afterwards, there's a lot of work. It's mostly a lot of work involved. And especially when you have a storyline like we had this week with Zach Taylor being down there, there's a lot of stories that, you can just go back and look at all the content that we ended up cranking out last week. And you can see, how much quote fun I had time for down the Super Bowl. But yeah, it's cool. It is still cool. It never does. You can't ever get so jaded to all the work to being your job that you don't enjoy the fact that you're here covering the Super Bowl. I mean, the people would die to have, it's a dream job and to have that set up. So I would never claim otherwise.
Well, you're a good, optimistic, positive guy.
Yeah.
When I was a sports writer, I hated the big events.
Yeah.
I just hated them, especially if my team wasn't in it. Like, I covered a World Series. I was a baseball writer in St. Paul. And I covered the World Series, and it was just...
And that's... Think about... I mean, the NFL level, the Super Bowl at this point, is so far beyond being anything about media or coverage, because they don't, there's just so many people there. What their opening night thing that they do on Monday night, it's not even about the reporter. The reporters are basically just pawns in the NFL's desire to have another entertainment show. They have concerts and people yelling and talking so that reporters can't even hear anything.
Wow.
Just so that they can have this great, energetic, live, loud show going on with all these 10,000 fans watching reporters interview players. It's insane. I mean, every availability is just packed and stacked with people to get, I'm lucky that I was looking for somebody very specific and obscure every day. Yeah. There wasn't like, but every podium for McVay, for Bill Belichick, for Brady, for even Andrew Whitworth is just packed for, 4 hours of availability during the week. So it's the big events are exhausting to deal with, because you spend so much time, energy trying to get a couple of questions in. Whereas here,
get around the crowds.
Oh, absolutely.
Get from the hotel to the ballpark or the stadium, and
I spent a lot of time when we were in Atlanta thinking about Cincinnati as a host for big events.
Yeah,
because Atlanta does a great job. It's centric downtown. Everything is very walkable. A lot of big, cool things, and their convention center is great.
Their streetcar down.
They have a streetcar.
They shut it down during the Super Bowl. Did you see that?
Well,
see the news on that?
I didn't see the news on that.
Well, streets were too crowded.
Well, that's just it. Well, they are, because I kept seeing those streetcars sitting there in traffic and kind of laughing about it. Why is this ridiculous? Dedicated lanes.
Many of the same issues with their streetcars we've had with ours.
Sure.
Surprise, surprise.
Surprise, surprise. But, I think about it, and I always think that, because Indy did the Super Bowl and could handle it.
Yeah.
And did a fantastic job. And still to this day, people talk about how great the Indy Super Bowl was because of everything they have
there.
Could
we handle it?
No. It goes back to the same thing when they talk about the Republican convention. They couldn't handle it because of U.S. Bank Arena, because you eventually have to have that venue. It's the only thing missing, because, you've got Music Hall would be great to host their big NFL honors event. You've got the convention center here is just as good as there is in Atlanta or any of these other places we've been to. You have the stadiums that you can do cool events.
So they use Phillips Arena for events?
Yes. State Farm Arena is actually where they held opening night.
That's where the Hawks play, right?
Yeah. Okay. So it is. And so you've got all of those places, and everybody gets out in the restaurant community. Atlanta is spread out enough, but the NFL plants itself very much just right downtown, but they do every single one in some capacity will use an arena. And I don't know, with US Bank being the way it is, it really is the one thing. Otherwise, there's no reason why Cincinnati couldn't host a Super Bowl. They would never host a Super Bowl because of the being an outdoor stadium.
Is the All-Star game any kind of There's no comparison. I've never been to a Super Bowl. I've never covered one.
I mean, there's a comparison. I mean,
could we say how well we pulled off the All-Star sure. game as an example of potentially how we could pull off a Super Bowl?
Yeah, I mean, but again, we don't have Super Bowl is a total non-starter. It's a total non-starter yeah. here, unless they built a giant dome.
Yeah, roof. Or, yeah,
and then they would get one. Because that all of these cities, if you build it, they will come is yeah. pretty much the Super Bowl
motto.
There aren't
that many cities that have, I mean, cold weather cities yeah, that have.
You're right. Minneapolis, which had the Super Bowl last year, yep. and then Atlanta built Detroit. This. I mean, they're not cold weather. Detroit, you know, they did the one in New York, but that was pretty much a one-off for New York building those stadiums and it being New York City. But then all the other options, I mean, LA is building a state. All these places, you know, if you don't have, they're great cities and would be great hosts. But you know, there's certain things you have to have.
Let me ask you this. I know you've been to Mercedes-Benz Stadium before with yeah. the Bengals. And actually, it was this past season, right?
Yeah,
yeah. What's your review of that stadium?
It's a mecca. It's huge. It's incredible. The amount of, money and equipment and just the bling of every single yeah. corner. I mean, their whole bottom level is all restaurants and suites all surrounding
Chick-fil-A.
There is a Chick-fil-A, oddly, considering it's not open on Sundays.
I know.
But you know, it's quite a place. No, that stadium is pretty ridiculous. And you know, it shows, people talk about Paul Brown Stadium and it's like, yeah, Paul Brown Stadium was built in 2000, but it is by NFL, current NFL standards, outdated as all
obsolete.
Hell. Yeah, I mean, it's not quite obsolete
yeah,
yet,
yeah,
but
sorry.
I mean, it happens so fast because so many of these new stadiums with new technology are built that it's almost impossible to keep up. And that's part of why when they made the lease the way they did, and they've taken a lot of heat for it, they just put all kinds of stuff about maintenance of trying to keep up because they want it to last longer because it's so hard to keep up. With yeah. the entire NFL, because there's so much money and all these, I mean, what's about to happen in LA and Vegas in these new stadiums will blow people's minds. I mean, billions upon billions of dollars.
Yeah. At some point, this bubble's got to burst, right? The stadium bubble.
I mean, it's the NFL bubble. I don't know. And this is why I really respect how fervent Cincinnati people have been against spending money on a stadium is as long as communities are still willing to give money to it, the league is going to continue
Absolutely.
To take it.
I don't blame
and
the
continue
league
to build stadiums. It's why Oakland is moving to Vegas because Nevada just like dropped all that money on them. Here, take it. Take yep. $750 million of our money. I guess I could sit here and talk about stadiums but we
have before, and we've talked about even with FC Cincinnati. It's like, hey, as long as that opportunity is there, and those incentives are there, you're a private company, a private business, nonprofit in the NFL's case.
Yeah,
it's like, you know, keep asking. What's the worst they can say? No, and then. Well, then that's usually when you start to threaten to move your team. But
yeah, and I think that's where I do give credit to the Bengals, and that is that they don't want to find themselves in another state, build a stadium situation again. They just want yeah. this one to last as long as it possibly can, and those are tough decisions, and that a lot of that stuff pisses people off because it's like, oh, we got to come back to it. But it's like, look, the other option is to have to consider building one of these things because that you can't yep. build a new stadium now and not have it be essentially state of the art. That would be even stupider. So
right. Oh, right.
It's a very challenging dynamic in that case when you get into NFL and stadiums and stuff. And so that's why I think the best case scenario for the Bengals has always been that those five rolling 2 year options at the end just turn into 10 years. And it ends up being, you know, you look at 2036 as the end of that lease.
Because I just think it's, yeah,
that's the best case scenario. Cause then you got 36 years. Out of a stadium, you know, if you could make that work, that would be a pretty big win.
I just think that I think the bubble and the money bubble, general money bubble in professional sports and even college sports is going to burst at some point as people continue to cut their cable and we go to streaming and
it's just a matter of fine, but it's not that people aren't still investing.
No, the same thing with the newspaper industry.
Yeah,
people are reading at all time highs.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, they're reading on digital. It's a matter of that business model was different than the old business model, much like cable TV. And I think that the day of reckoning really is going to come in sports where, you know, they're still going to make millions and millions and millions and even billions of dollars, but not what they're making right now.
Maybe. I mean, I can't speak for all sports. And certainly I think the future of sports is interesting because, you know, NFL's bigger. NFL's problem is not going to be where the revenue is going to come from. It's going to be concussions and kids not playing and things like that. And the rise of things like esports and the rise of things, you know, the rise of soccer, which we've been, you know, people have been calling for that
e-sports
for 30 years.
Being like video games?
Video games. Oh. They're building stadiums for people to go and watch people play video games now. There's esports teams in high school and stuff.
Seriously?
It's one of the fastest growing things amongst young kids.
I sense a curmudgeon moment coming on.
I mean, probably. I have fought this because I keep saying there's no way that this is a thing to people in the business, people in the industry, and they all are like, there's no fighting. You don't have to understand it to know that it's a thing. It's in the numbers. It's in the amount of people that do it. I mean, you know, it's the YouTube generation. It's all the gamers.
That's kind of neat, though, the fact that they're making community spaces for it so people are actually getting out and interacting
people
and meeting
to
people
watch.
There.
If you think about it, if you really get down to the basics of what it is, it's people competing against each other using hand-eye coordination and people watching, living vicariously because they understand how the game works, watching the intricacies of the game and you know, marveling at how well some of these people play and watching them play against each
other. Neat.
It's the basics of sports. It just happens to be in playing a video game.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like chess, but more entertaining, right? It's the same concept. You're still watching people compete. And I think that's how they view it. You know, drone racing leagues on ESPN, right?
Really?
That's a thing. They did one. They had an event here, right? I believe they did an event here. It was going to go down through the bus area down underneath by the stadium, by Fort Washington Way and stuff.
Riverfront Transit Center.
Yeah. Yeah. I check me on that. Someone's got to check me after this on them doing that. I thought they were going to do something like that.
Interesting.
Anyway, yeah, it's all out there. It's all out there.
What else you got?
I don't know. I'm just hot today, aren't I?
You're on fire.
I'm on fire.
We're just rolling.
It's hot in the booth. It's hot in the booth today. Let's take a quick break. And Jason, you're going to pop on, do a little interview around the newsroom. How's that sound?
Sounds great.
I think you should right now walk out in the newsroom, find somebody, and everyone will be surprised who it's going to be and pull them in here. How's that sound?
Sounds great.
All right.
All right. We're in our guest segment today. She's been a special guest host today. She's always special and she's always a guest. Welcome here, Sherry Coolidge, the Inquirer City Hall reporter, fresh out of the Economic Growth Committee meeting. She came right from that, right into the booth here, where they were dealing with more FC Cincinnati drama. Sherry, welcome in.
Yeah, a lot of drama over the last 24 hours. Glad to be here, though.
Yeah. Tell us, can you break this down and what's going on? I mean, so I know it's all, you said the last 24 hours, and it started with not shutting the traffic thing, with not shutting Central Parkway down, to the late breaking news story last night about the music hall sound study, to this morning where they discussed all that and then some.
So basically, we're on a tight schedule with FC Cincinnati. You know, they have a construction schedule. They're supposed to open in March 2021 for that season, and they need to pour this foundation next month. And so it's basically like, what's the back out schedule look like there?
Yeah.
They took it through planning. So, you know, they didn't submit plans really till the end of last year. It was the first planning commission meeting of this year, 6-hour extravaganza. And now the next step is that it needs to go to City Hall for council to approve it. And so that meeting was today, and just a committee meeting, and then it has to go to full council. But in the lead up to this, there are still so many issues outstanding with the stadium. Like, people really were, you know, just putting out how they're feeling about things, and like the neighborhood's concerned about Central Parkway being closed on game days. The ballet still doesn't know what it's going to do about its parking, which basically they have a right to, but it sits under the stadium. And how can that be reconfigured if it can be reconfigured? So they talked about that, music hall. You know, there's a sound study. The sound study says that the stadium will impact what's going on in music hall performances and rehearsals. This dropped last night at 8:50. It was given to the media and it was given to the team all at the same time. And so, like, all of these things kind of rolled out because they're very important. Like, these groups and the people with concerns are asking council to, you know, hold up their vote and to have these things worked out.
Was that done? Let's go back to the sound study. So that was dropped at 8:50 last night. Was that done as kind of a jerk move, or was that done as a last minute, like, ooh, they're going to vote on something tomorrow, so we need to drop this, make this public right now and send this over to the team and the media?
I think the team is certainly frustrated, you know, that they didn't even really get a chance to see it before, A, they were being asked questions by the media, and B, council was looking at it at the same time with, you know, less than 12 hours till the meeting.
Yeah.
And so they were like, I think they're frustrated. But from the Arts Association, we're talking about everyone who uses it, the ballet, the opera, the May Festival, the symphony. Mm-hmm. They're very, very worried about acoustics. And we just did a huge overdue of Music Hall to make it, you know, more user friendly. And
yeah.
And sound was a very, very big part of that, preserving all that sound. And so I think they're just trying to get ahead of what's going on. But that process maybe started a little bit too late.
Is that the Arts Association basically saying, like, you know, that, you know, you've been bullying us, or is that them thinking they've been bullied by FC and they're going to turn around and drop that at 8:50 last night without first talking to FC? Is there some hurt feelings going on between those two parties right now? Certainly there are now, but were there prior to this thing coming out last night?
Well, Jeff, the team president, he said no publicly today, that he's been working with all of these groups. They've had a meeting before. He says he talks weekly with the ballet. I think a lot of these organizations, though, are expecting, you know, FC Cincinnati is the new thing coming. And I think they expect that FC Cincinnati, they are, you know, Carl Lindner's a billionaire. And I think they see that the teams really should fix all these things. And Jeff's saying no.
Well, I'm with Jeff on that. I don't feel like the team owes everyone everything. I think that, and I think you've certainly followed this much closer than I have, but yeah, there have been some mistakes along the way and really that relate to rush, a schedule of trying to get an MLS, trying to get a stadium deal done. But I think in that time frame, for the most part, FC Cincinnati has really made a concerted effort. And yes, they've made some mistakes. But I think if you looked at it overall, considering the time schedule, they've been pretty good corporate citizens, I think.
I mean, they would definitely say that. I think others would say no. But the truth of the matter is, and this came up, you know, a city lawyer said today, this was a very, you know, almost like it was like David Mann asked a question and a lawyer answered it today. He's like, I really don't think the council can tell one private entity that they have control over another private entity. The stadium is coming.
Yes.
Just like the streetcar, it was coming. It was dealt a very big setback. These projects are coming. Five members of council said, we want to do this. And it's like, you can't just be like, well, now what? I mean, there has to be problem solving and solutions every single step of the way.
Well, it takes leadership. Number one, it takes leadership from City Hall, from the City Hall standpoint. I think there's great leadership on the FC side. I mean, I think Jeff Birding is a really good leader, and he knows what he wants, and he's going to go get it, and we've seen that. I mean, the fact that him and the Lindners and the Josephs and the Farmers have all put together this franchise in such quick order and now have gotten it all the way to the major leagues in American soccer in this quick, you know, time frame, I think you don't do that without a vision and leadership. But, you know, at some point, City Hall has got to step up. And this is my opinion that this is John Cranley's legacy, and that really I feel like the mayor needs to step up. And, you know, he did such a good job, I thought, last year in stepping up on it. And it's at some point here, I think he needs to step up again and say, and really take a public lead on this and say, folks, this has got to get fixed. Let's not go down this path again of nitpick, tit for tat. We're going to end up having the banks, you know, 2.0, the streetcar 3.0, and, you know, a compromise project to a point where it's kind of meh. We've seen way too much of that around here, and somebody's got to step up and say, enough's enough.
We'll see what happens. I feel like we're going to hear a lot more about this, like, during the week, this week, before it comes. I mean, there's still the land deals outstanding, right? That has to probably come next Wednesday of what the city owns some land that FC needs to buy. So that has to get worked out, too. I think this is going to be, like, a critical 7 days that we're going to look back when this it starts being built and even after it's built. Like, what happened in these 7 days? These are going to be massive decisions.
So do you think within 7 days from now, you know, I guess by what, next Wednesday afternoon, this whole thing is all going to be resolved?
No, I actually don't. But the question, but I think the thing is, does council say then we're going to vote and we're going to let it go forward? Because once council lets this out of their sights, the process is the process.
Yeah.
It will. They never have another say. But it does have to go back to Planning Commission, which the next set of plans is due March 25th. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Planning Commission, they're appointed by our elected officials, and they're, you know, we have seen a lot of responsibility from them. They ask the good questions, and, you know, our Planning Commission is widely respected. But then the rest of these decisions is going to be up to them. And is council going to say, okay, Planning Commission, we trust you and you can do all of this? Or is council going to say to themselves, I want more answers before I give my, you know, signature to this? Because let's look at the streetcar, right?
Yep.
I mean, those votes come back to people. I feel like this vote is almost as important or more important than what the original vote to say we're going to get a soccer stadium. I think people are going to look back to this vote and it's like, did we let this all go through with what we knew? Or did we not? These votes will come back to these people, I think.
Let me ask you this from a stepping back from a big picture standpoint. And I hate dwelling on the past because we do so much of that here in Cincinnati as a whole, I think. But could we have used another year on this and say, like, if we could do it all over again, could we have just said, like, look, let's target 2022 as opening the new stadium instead of 2021? And why aren't we doing? Why didn't we do that? Can you explain the reasoning behind that?
There's no part of me that does not think this all comes down to money. The sooner you have your own stadium, the sooner you're making more money.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that is not a criticism. You know what? What we need to do, honestly, is we need to get with Pat Brennan, who's covering soccer for us, and really do like a big add up of what this is costing. Mm-hmm. They said that the stadium was supposed to be $200 million. They're definitely saying it's $250 million now. No part of me thinks it's actually costing more. And that is private investment by these team owners in our city. And so, you know, they're going to be looking to make their money back. They're businessmen, and I'm pretty sure they didn't get wealthy by, you know, making bad business decisions. And so I think that's what's really driving this timeline. But they're also investing in the team itself. We have had a winning football club, and they want to do that again. And so I'm sure they're pouring a lot of money into that side. We just saw the expansion draft of, like, selecting our team. And so, I mean, they're spending a lot of money. And so that's the underpinning of everything here.
How much of this fight do you think has to do with, and I know this is a national narrative right now where, you know, there's so much talk around, you know, taxing the rich out of some new Congress folks in Washington. And how much of this do you think goes to a political philosophy and, you know, there's a city hall, the progressives at city hall saying, oh, look, it's the rich guys over there and they need to, you know, they need to do their thing. And do you think that's playing into this whole thing? And I don't know if I'm being clear about that, that basically it's you've got a certain type of agenda from the progressives at City Hall. And then on the other side, you have private, wealthy business people. And do you think just that alone is creating some of the friction here?
Well, you know, I think there's a lot of frustration in City Hall. These council members, and I definitely think that we can't fault them. We have just abysmal poverty rate in the city, and we have got to do something about it.
Well, then they should start doing something about it.
But there's no money. And so I think when you look at, like, they want FC Cincinnati to pay for land and they want them to pay this much money, mm-hmm. I think these council members are thinking, well, we want to give back to the community, which this eviction prevention fund with some of this money, you know, is going towards. But the flip side of that is that, you know, these are business people and they're making an investment in the city. And I was talking to Alex Coolidge, you know, we're married. We were talking
our business reporter,
we were talking
Procter
about
Gamble
it this morning
reporter.
When we were getting ready for work. And I was asking him some questions about, you know, wealth and the, on the business side of things. Mm-hmm. And he was explaining to me that, you know, when you make a business decision, you know how much profit you're going to make. We don't know what this is. We don't have sure. team finances. And it's much like, you know, most of these teams, we don't know.
Yeah.
And he's like, they know, though. And they have to make, you know, a sound business decision to make this work. And so there's only so much money. So you can, you know, I'm, you know, kind of offhandedly occasionally say, well, this is a checkbook with $1 billion in it.
Yeah.
That's not really true. And so there's these competing forces.
Let me throw this side of things at you, though. And I would say that the Lindner family, the farmers, the Joseph family have done a lot to help people in this region with their own personal private money. I can specifically speak for the Lindners, knowing that they've poured millions and millions, tens of millions of dollars into fighting poverty in this region. And so you would like, I guess, in a perfect world without politics and without thinking about political narratives and all that, you would like to think that people would be fair and see that these have been philanthropic business people. And, you know, again, they are business people. You're right. But there's nothing evil about that. And I don't like the fact that they're being made, you know, that there are some people who make them out to be, you know, I guess, I don't know if evil is the right word, or coming from a place that isn't maybe isn't a place of goodness.
There has been a lot of talk about that. I mean, even with this project alone. So, you know, Jeff at the microphone today kind of went through a litany of things. There's a community benefits agreement. There is, you know, minority contracting requirements.
Yep.
There's going to be a program for reentry that hires felons and gets them on the path to, you know, having a job. And so there's a lot of components like that with this project, just like there were with the banks and just like there were with the casino. And, you know, it's not like that's being ignored, that side of things, the Good Samaritan side. And, you know, I do believe that, and there's been a lot of investment in the children's soccer teams and the little senators, and you know those people have been around these meetings, and they are thrilled. And to me, a lasting image of everything, until I get the next rendering anyway, is the groundbreaking, which you know was not necessarily really a groundbreaking, but there were all these children there. It was a lovely day outside, and there were children there who lived in the neighborhood, and they all had these little shovels. And they could not have been more thrilled. And I feel like that's going to be a memorable thing for them in their childhood. They're going to watch the stadium come up. And I feel like that they are going to be allowed to be a part of everything.
Yeah. And that's just what they're doing from the soccer standpoint. And then what I was referring to earlier was what these families and business folks have done kind of individually separate from. I know the farmers have poured a lot of money into public school education in Cincinnati. And so I think it's just, I wish it would stop. It's so Cincinnati, and you'd like to think we've come so far in this town, with so many wonderful things that have happened in recent years with development. But when these things happen, you realize we have so much farther to go.
I agree. I mean, if you look back at like GE, when GE decided to locate at the banks, mm-hmm. it was a very big deal when that happened with a lot of tax incentive monies just like this. In fact, that was getting state and city and county
local,
$112 million in tax incentives. And this one has $34 million from city taxpayers. But that was hailed as like the biggest thing that ever come to this city. Thank you, GE. This is amazing. Thank you for investing in our city. And that is not the narrative that we are seeing here. And yet this is a $250 million investment in the city.
Yep. Well, we'll be following you, Sherry, at Sharon Coolidge on Twitter. Your stuff on Cincinnati.com. So thanks for coming in, and I'm sure we're going to have you back soon.
Yeah, this isn't my more traditional role, just as a guest friend of the show.
Thanks, Sherry.
All right, interview segment is officially over, and it's time for the That's What Cincinnati moment. This is what people want. They desire it.
They clamor for
it. They want to know what the That's the Same moment is going to be this week. So I have one. It has to come. My beat is it's having a big week here with the Zach Taylor press conference and the one interesting
Go Bengals, man.
Go Bengals. Who day? New Day is the new.
Oh, that's what they're going with. Seize the Day.
They're going with. I think New Day is where they're going right now.
Seize the Day was.
I actually
lame.
Seize the Day was lame. I like New Day. Okay. I think it actually does connect with what people have been wanting. Anything new, right?
Well, playing so off of Season Day and now it's New Day. I mean, I like New Day in that way.
look at you. So my That's What's Insane moment to me is that finding out that one of the big selling points for Zach Taylor, one of the big reasons that he liked this job and really wanted to come here, was because of just the 1 year he spent. He has four kids, him and his wife, Sarah, and they had a year here and just fell in love with the place. And I think it's so Cincinnati of someone that never really thinks about this place. Maybe you come here, you end up here for a job, and you end up staying here or really never wanting to leave. I have talked to so many people, and we see a lot of them that come through here in the newsroom just because of the nature of our business, that come in and just never would have thought that this place totally blows their mind to what it is when they actually get in here compared to what the perception is. And I think it's so Cincinnati of people to come back, to want to come back and be a part of it. That's something I feel like is as part of our city as anything at this point, because of what's happened here in the last decade. People are shocked when they get here and to see everything that's here because it never really was part of what Cincinnati was.
I think they're impressed by the streetcar. Exactly.
That's it. I think that's it. I think they rode the streetcar one time and said, man, we
got to get back.
We've got to get back here. We got to see this thing. Imagine it in a couple. That was 2016. Was it up yet?
Yeah, it started in September of 16. Yeah, so when he was here.
They'll probably be surprised at how many people won't be riding with them when they go to get on it at this point 2 years later.
How long until this guy gets bingalized?
Oh, Jesus. Why is it got to be like that? Why is it always got... I don't know. Give him a couple years.
He'll be jaded.
I mean, the idea is that he will create a new... that there won't be a bengalization, that the new day will get rid of the bengalization.
He'll be rolling into their press conferences smoking non-filtered cigarettes, bags under his eyes. I gotta deal with you again, Daner.
This sounds almost like your Marge Schott impression right there.
Smoke them if you got them. Hey, honey.
Just sit down at the table. What do you want? See, I love those guys.
That's true. Bruce Coslet used to be like one of those guys. Yeah.
Just sit down and be like, what do you want?
Oh, he would notoriously sit on his desk, throw his feet up and just smoke a nail and just sit back and just have the entire. That's old school, man. I mean, back in the day.
Burning a heater, baby.
Burning a heater. I have a lot of stories of coaches from back in the day who would sit around and smoke. And, you know, that was just sort of who they were. You know,
let's hope Zach Taylor doesn't get.
I don't think that's him. He's kind of the opposite of
that.
He's
a New Day guy.
He's a New Day guy. Clean cut, you know, father of four, upstanding young man.
Love Cincinnati, apparently.
Apparently fell in love with Cincinnati.
Do you think that's real or do you think that's...
No, that's real. Like, okay. I know that's like part of the equation for him. I mean, that was really part of, you know, when he was weighing it, that was a big
Where's
deal.
He originally from?
Oklahoma.
Okay.
Yeah, Norman, Oklahoma. So, you know, Big 12 football country. He ended up going to Nebraska and became Big 12 Player of the Year.
He went somewhere... Before that, then to junior college, then to Nebraska, right?
Yeah.
Where did you go, Florida State?
No. He ended up at Butler Community College. Without my notes.
Yeah, but where did he play first?
He didn't play much.
Yeah,
he didn't really start playing until he got to Nebraska.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah.
So that's my what else do you got? What's your curmudgeonly? Do you have any curmudgeon moments you got going on right now, man?
Well, I kind of got a curmudgeon and a. Actually, a Cincinnati moment of the week.
Okay.
And that's this FC Cincinnati Stadium thing. It is just... Oh, man.
I was hoping we wouldn't get through an episode without talking about FC Cincinnati.
I know. So as we record right now, it's on a Tuesday, you know, or morning, early afternoon. So last night the news broke that Music Hall, the noise factor from the new stadium in the West End could impact Music Hall, which is, you know, a block or so away. And so now that fight is on. Earlier in the day yesterday, City Council, the five progressive Democrats, we've talked many times about them, passed a motion to not close Central Parkway on game days. And so you've got a pretty fast-moving parkway where a lot of people are going to be crossing over into the main entrance of the stadium, and they're not going to close it, at least for before and after games. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but these are the same people who, for the last month or so, have been beating the bush about pedestrian safety, and yet they turn around and say, oh, no, we can't close Central Parkway. It makes no sense because they close the street right in front of Paul Brown Stadium during game days.
Yeah.
They close the street right by Great American Ballpark during game days. I don't know what the name of the street is, but I know it's closed.
Yep.
And it's just like, you know, this is all about politics, and it's all about appeasing a very small number of people in over the Rhine who are not happy about the stadium, who live near Central Parkway, and who are complaining about the stadium and who are trying to make it difficult. And, you know, frankly, these are people who think of themselves as, you know, being on the, you know, cutting edge of, you know, the city, and they're hip and they live in over the Rhine, and yet they're being kind of sticks in the mud when it comes to some of this progress on the stadium, which is really one of the best things to come along in the city for a while. Mm-hmm. Although, let's face it, I mean, yeah, there's been a lot of challenges, but when it comes to the popularity of this team,
it's united people.
It really has. And but we have a small group of people that city council wants to pander to, and so here's hoping that no one gets run over or hit or, you know, God forbid, seriously injured, or I don't even want to say it. Excuse right. me. On game day, it just makes no sense not to shut that down, at least just for, you know, before the game.
An hour before to the hour after.
An hour after. Yeah, exactly. And heck, maybe while the game's going on, you can open it back up for a little bit. I don't mm-hmm. know. But there's just so much more. You got this sound thing with Music Hall. There's also still, the zoning for the land is not done yet. Mind you, as you pointed out before we started recording that, and they broke ground on this stadium.
Yeah, we've already broken ground on this. Like, hey, like, you know, it's like the mission accomplished sign, right? I
mean, yeah. Well, that was sort of a pomp and circumstance. There was everyone, you know, the worst kept secret was there was still a lot of things to work out. But my big complaint is, We've said we wanted soccer. We've said we are cool with the stadium deal, but yet now we're turning around and trying to nitpick and fight over all these little details now. And I'm not saying roll over and just give them what they want, but have some conversations. Don't try to play this out publicly.
This is what having a stadium is.
Exactly.
Having a stadium is you have to shut down streets around it on game day when there's going to be 20,000 some people going
Absolutely.
To one place. And yet would be the case if it was a game or if it was 20,000 people going to Music Hall.
Yes.
For anything. It's about crowd control.
Exactly.
And safety, not about a stadium.
So, you know, and there's still the land deal. They're still trying to get this parking lot behind the police station.
Ooh, that's fun.
And so they're still battling over that. And it's just, I know that's what the show's called. It is so Cincinnati that, and I think we talked about this on the show before, or an episode, is that, you know, Columbus, when the crew was on the verge of leaving, the Columbus City Council, the Franklin County Commissioners, all got together. I don't know if they got together all at once, but they both of those government entities said, we're keeping these guys. Here's the money. All voted unanimous to keep it and give them money, and yet here we are, still nitpicking and poking.
I mean, by all, but it's I mean, just, it seems it, there's nitpicking, but it still is happening. I mean, it's not like,
well, yeah, at the end of the day, it's going to happen. It's just that,
it's why does it have to be like this?
Yeah.
Why does it have to be like this? Always about every little thing.
I know. And yes. So, yeah, if there's anyone out there worried about whether there's going to be a stadium built in the West End still, that has been decided. There will be a stadium there.
But you know what you can, you know what happens here? And this is to a broader point of something that you make fun of all the time. It goes back to the, it goes back to the streetcar in that what ends up happening here. When you say you're going to do something and then you nitpick it down and nitpick it down and you end up compromising the entire project, which, you know, it's like the streetcar, which started as this big thing, which is a great idea, actually connecting UC and downtown. It could be actually be a thing. And then it turns, you compromise it down and you bicker it down to something that is stupid.
Yep. We can't have anything nice. Make sense. Here.
Right. And so you, that's the one thing you want to hope doesn't happen with this is you, all this stuff ruins to the point that it kills the experience. You know, like if you don't end up making this parking garage, or if you do end up, I mean, there's all things that can happen that end up really hurting your experience and hurting what this could and should be.
Well, I mean, another example of, you know, the nitpicking and the complaining, the bickering and blah, 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 are the bank, is the banks.
Right. Still ongoing, by the
still
way.
Still ongoing, by the way, a decade after we first
they'll
broke ground.
They'll be knocking the stadiums down by the time they finish phase three. Yeah.
So at the end of the day, I will say this. If we could back up, if we would all have just taken a deep breath and looked on the horizon, I think legitimately we probably should have said targeted more of 2022 for opening this new stadium, because clearly there are still a lot of issues to work out. Instead of, as it is, it's 2021, but I think you would have needed another year of kind of working through this, or 6 months. So,
and who knows if it keeps, if it gets pushed back and pushed back, and
maybe it will construction be 2022.
Maybe it will end up being there anyway. All right. Thanks everybody for listening to the That's a Cincinnati. Appreciate you checking in. Remember, keep listening, rate us on iTunes. All those stars and comments that you leave are huge.
Five stars.
We want your stars. Give us all the stars. We
all
appreciate
five of them.
If you like the show, if you like the podcast, and you want it to stick around, please go follow, subscribe, give us a review, all that stuff. We always appreciate everybody that is listening. The numbers have been great. Thank you to everybody that continues to come on board. If you're new, I know we seem to be hearing from more and more of those people every week, of people that are finding us. And if you're finding us, there's lots of relevant old episodes that are still very fresh and have not changed. A lot of the topics are very much the same as they
were. Still fighting at City Hall. Still fighting about FC Stadium.
A lot of the stuff, which is also so Cincinnati that you can just go back about 4 weeks and a lot of the same fights are happening. But anyway, and the interviews are all also great to go back and log. Tribe. Who, by the way, we talked about this on the podcast, that look out for them, and how great it would be for them to be on Bunbury. Guess what? They're on the Bunbury bill. So if you want to see them and you're going to Bunbury this summer, Tribe will be there. It's a great chance for you to check them out on a big stage.
And that was episode 19, by the way.
That was the Covcath episode. Tribe was in the middle of that, and with Peace came out and joined us. And, man, they're awesome. You can just go.
Congrats to Tribe, by the way.
Congrats to them for getting on there. That's going to be really awesome. And pumped for them, and that's really where they need to be. They need to be on that Bunbury stage. So excited to have them. It was great having them here. Thanks to all of you for coming around and listening to this week on That's So Cincinnati. We'll talk to you next week. Have a good one, everybody.